From the point of view of the country, I'd like Rob Andrew to take over as the head of NAMA.
In regards to Bo, I think on paper at least he has won that as a wet dream of blowing it.
They're entitled to watch it. It is our rugby football union, not theirs. They didn't have the right, they didn't have the mandate to give my rights away to Sky TV. End of rant.
Serge Blanco will be in the dressing room giving them evil stares. I think that'll scare them enough into doing something anyway. So,
can I get through the door? These days, Serge.
This is Talking Rugby Podcast, the rugby show by the fans for the fans.
Munster's three-game winning run in the Rabo Direct Pro 12 came to an end on Friday in Treviso. Jackson impresses as Ulster come good. Warriors hold firm to inflict defeat on champions Leinster, while Zebre's historic victory in Cardiff on Friday ended a 12-month wait for their maiden win in the new franchise. They'll now wish to try and break their home duct in Parma. The Wallabies are bracing for a South African onslaught in their test on Saturday, while the home side are eyeing a bonus point win at Newlands. This is Talking Rugby. I'm Dave O'Grady. Remember, if you'd like to sponsor, advertise, or simply get involved with the show, drop us an email to dave@talkingsport.org. That's dave@talkingsport.org. We're also on Facebook and we're on Twitter. Now, joining me tonight, making his comeback to the show, it's the comeback king, we'll call him. He's also the star of the Talking Rugby intro. It is Ulster man William. William, thanks a million for joining us. We're so happy to hear you back on the programme.
Good evening, gentlemen. Yes, I've just made a brief touchdown in County Antrim before I'm off again on Friday to Scotland for another 10 days of excitement and touring up and down the West Coast.
It really must be exciting for you, William. All these trips, they're like an adventure for you.
Yeah, it's good fun. Make some money, play some tunes, drink some drink, you know. That sort of thing is very good. It gets a bit tedious sometimes, you know.
Yeah, and to follow the rugby in between that all, I'm sure it's a bit of a juggling act.
Well, it's easier now with sort of mobile broadband, but it's not perfect. I watched the Ulster Glasgow game on a laptop in Strandhill in Sligo. Which actually had very good reception for them.
Fantastic stuff, it has to be said. We're thrilled to have you back. We're also joined by our Kiwi fan, Matt. Thanks a million, Matt, for joining us. No doubt you've been keeping your eyes on the Rugby Championship, which we'll be coming to later on the programme. And indeed, you've been catching up with all the Rabo action.
Yeah, keeping an eye on it. I'm following Leinster the most this season, so I try and watch all of the Leinster games where I can. But although I didn't get to see the other Irish teams in action this weekend, unfortunately, I certainly keep an eye on the results. And the Rabo website always has highlights, so at least you can see the try-scoring action, which is great.
It's a fantastic actual website, www.rabodirectpro12.com. It's got its match centres, results, interactive section, previews and reviews, so you'll never miss a second if you didn't catch it on TV. Now, lads, I want to kick things off. I want to get straight into the Rabo action, and I want to go to Munster. We spoke about them quite a bit on the programme last week, but it wasn't to be. Ludovicio Nitoliga, I love that name, he crossed twice for Benetton Treviso, and Matt Burquist, he kicked superbly as the Italians upset previous table toppers Munster in a 29-19 win in the Rabo Direct Pro 12. William, I'll come to yourself on this. Munster came to the Stadio Domenico bidding to become the first side ever to begin a league season with three maximum point victories. But is it fair to say that a lack of discipline cost them dearly?
Yes, I have to say that was the overall impression that I got, because they put out a pretty decent team. They had a 10-point lead, and we know Treviso are a good side. They're no whipping boys. But for Munster with that side out to surrender that lead was quite bizarre, and a lot of it was just down to simply to bad discipline. Although I have to say there was one yellow card in particular that I thought was crazy. Was it Sheridan got a yellow card for seemingly nothing? And things like that can hurt a team. But for a team like Munster to surrender a 10-point lead is almost unheard of.
An un-Munster characteristic.
Yeah, they were a little bit fortunate in some ways, you know, to have the lead the 10-point lead, because they were given the penalty try, which I looked at it over and over and over again, and I couldn't really see why. Yeah. But it's one of those glitches along the road. These things do happen. But their discipline was really, really poor. I'm sure Penny was tearing his hair out. But you have to give credit to Treviso. Matt Burquist played really well. Natoglia is a good player. And that's a team that has they're no mugs. If you look at the side, they've got Luke McLean, Loamanu, Campagnaro, Scarby, Natoglia, Burquist, Gori, Rizzo, Ciccato, DeMarchi, Pavanello, Favaro, Zani, and, you know, Barbieri. These are really good. Most of those guys are international rugby players and pretty good ones. So nobody should take them lightly. If it had been Zebre that Munster lost to, you know, there would have been a much bigger outcry, but that's a decent enough team, and any side that goes there is going to find it hard to win.
They will indeed, and I absolutely love the way those players just rolled off your tongue, William, so naturally, it has to be said.
I think that's the benefit of having done Latin in school in 1960.
Beautiful, beautiful. Matt, to come to yourself, just a point actually, William mentioned Burquist, Matt Burquist, he really was in fine kicking form for Treviso. And on a night where Munster are so indisciplined, to have a kicker like Burquist for Treviso really does make all the difference. And a player like that can really get you over the line when other teams aren't maybe up to scratch.
Yeah, Burquist is to Treviso what Jimmy Gopith is probably to Leinster, in that he's a player who's come from New Zealand. He comes from Crusaders territory, which is where I'm from, who was never going to make it at All Black level, but he's a good player and he certainly played well for the Crusaders. I think it was two seasons ago now. So he's a good signing for them, and as you said, he is a good goal kicker. And in a night like that, when Munster were ill-disciplined, having someone who can just keep slotting over the three-pointers is very valuable. So he'll be a great signing for them, I would have thought.
Indeed he will, and long may it continue. Well done to Treviso, and hard luck to Munster. It is quite disappointing. Now, Newport Gwent Dragons' last six matches have all been won by the home side on the day, while the men from Gwent's only Pro 12 away victory was in March 2012. That was at Zebre in February. No surprises there. The Dragons have indeed won their last two games against Irish provinces, though, but both games were played at Rodney Parade, so you have to go back as far as September 2008 to find their most recent away victory over a province. Now, William, this match is live on RTE and S4C. You can't overlook a Munster win. It just has to be the way.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, for all the Dragons have won a couple of games against Ulster, who were terrible, Scarlets, who kind of shot themselves in the foot, but they played well. And of course, Lynn Jones is no mug as a coach. He's been around the block, and they've got Kingsley Jones in there as their forwards coach. They'll put up a good show, but I just think that Munster will be stung into action. I don't think they can. The Dragons don't have a front row capable of offering a serious threat to anyone. The Scarlets had them on toast. The Ulster, come back to the Ulster game, Ulster demolished the front row with whatever set of forwards came on. Whatever set of front row came on. So Munster should be in the driving seat there. The Dragons line-out isn't brilliant. They do have a couple of players who are quite good, and they have players capable of slotting the ball over, just like Burquist did. So that they're not without threat, but when it comes down to it, they're not going to win in Thomond Park. They're just not. Ain't going to happen.
Okay, ain't going to happen. Matt, come to you. There's no difference there, probably, in what you'll say. It's going to be a win for Munster.
Yeah, I would think so. I don't really have a lot to add on that, but I'd agree with William there. I can't see Munster losing at home, particularly when they've come off the back of that defeat to Treviso. I'm sure they want to put things right, so yeah, definitely a Munster win for me.
Yeah, and just to mention, actually, I think William said Thomond Park, Musgrave Park at...
Sorry,
yeah, Musgrave, yeah, quarter to seven is the venue there, live on RTE and S4C, the 28th of September. Now, the Glasgow Warriors made it three wins from three and inflicted a first defeat of the season on Rabo champions Leinster, 12-6 win. I suppose, Matt, a great win for Glasgow, but I think everybody will agree it was a god-awful game.
Yeah, it was a terrible game of rugby to watch, particularly from a Leinster viewpoint, where they'll want to hope that that's their one and only sort of misfiring of the season. I mean, yes, Glasgow won the game, but they were pretty poor and close to the Leinster line in terms of converting their opportunities. So although in terms of the overall game, Glasgow was much the better side. Certainly they dominated in defence. They were better at the breakdown, etc. But despite that, they only won by 6 points, I think it was. So it was fairly awful viewing, to be honest. And I just hope for Leinster's sake that they've got that one out of the system and can improve from here on in.
I suppose from a Glasgow point of view, it has been a pretty good start. And man of the match, I think, in the game was Johnny Gray, the young Scot. It really is important for them to get their rugby up from previous years and, you know, to see Glasgow do well and young players like Johnny Gray doing so well, in albeit it is the Rabo. This can only be a positive for Glasgow and for Scotland.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, Scotland rugby has been a bit in the doldrums, as we know, over the last number of years, so it'd be nice to see a Scottish side go well. And of course, we've got in the background this whole palaver about what's happening to the Heineken Cup, so it'll help the Celtic nations, I would think, to a certain extent, if they can show that they're competitive again across the board. So Glasgow certainly had a promising enough season last year, and I think it would be good for them to continue on, for sure.
Now for Leinster, Will, Cardiff Blues, they are at the RDS. Their only win in their last five Rabo games was the 21-10 at home to Connacht in the second round. Their most recent win on the road in the tournament was by a single point at Bents against Edinburgh at Murrayfield back as far as February. Now they've won two of their four games against Irish provinces last season, so maybe there's a little bit of optimism there for Cardiff, but a Leinster win?
Absolutely. I think Cardiff are in for a world of pain because Leinster will want to set their record right after their lacklustre display against Glasgow. Cardiff are a very poor side. They've been going downhill for three seasons, maybe slightly more. They don't really have anything to offer. They have some good players. They've got Lee Halfpenny, a few other guys who are pretty decent, but to be honest, they just don't have the pack, really. I mean, we all know that if you've got a good set of forwards, you've got a chance. If you haven't got a good set of forwards, you've no chance, and they don't. I think Leinster will easily get the bonus point victory.
Yeah, I'd agree with William on that. I think Leinster will have no trouble winning this match at home, and I'd hope that they'd get the 4-try bonus as well. I guess the main thing in the bigger picture that's a bit of a worry for Leinster is the number of injuries for their back three at the moment. Obviously, Lottie DeCary didn't last more than about 20 minutes in the game in the weekend. Obviously, Luke Fitzgerald's still injured, etc. So I think from a Leinster point of view, aside from getting the show back on track in terms of a victory, they'll be hoping that they don't ship any more injuries, particularly in the back line. I mean, I think people would like to see Ian Madigan get a run at 10, and hopefully he'll be named there this weekend. But obviously, the injuries that they've been having, he's been used at fullback. So I guess in the background, apart from trying to get things back on track, they'll be hoping they don't ship any more injuries. I think that would be very important for Leinster.
Yeah, I think, come the weekend, Leinster will have Jamie Heaslip back. And there's no doubt in my mind that they always play better when he's on song. I really don't see how Cardiff can actually do anything against them. I just think that I just hope the injuries are minor, because did I see Fitzgerald going off again? Or was that the previous game? Just kind of out of touch. I hope whatever problem he has is a very minor one, because Leinster even Ireland could really do with a guy like him being back on song.
Yeah, he didn't play this last weekend there, William, but right. I think the Leinster updates say today that he's still not due back quite yet. So whatever he's done, right, he's going to be out for a wee while yet. But I agree with you from a Leinster point of view, and obviously from an Irish perspective as well, it would be nice to see him having a run of injury-free time on the field. So yeah, I wish him well. Hopefully he will be back shortly.
Yeah, and of course, I suppose, I know you alluded to it slightly earlier about the mess that the European Rugby Cup has become. We now have a lot of press speculation about Sean O'Brien and Jamie Heaslip when their contracts expire at the end of this season. You know, that's going to unsettle those guys, as well as the other players and the fans. And the same thing for Ulster with the news that was released by the French that Toulon has signed Rouen Pienaar. You know, I don't think they have. They might well be going to, but I don't think they can actually do that at the moment anyway under French rugby regulations. But those things don't help either. And it's the start of a season, and most of the players will be looking 2 weeks down the line to the Heineken Cup and wondering what the hell's going to happen in the future. So it's not a good time for anybody, to be honest.
Yeah, interesting stuff there. And just to go back to the Leinster-Cardiff Blues game, if you're interested in watching, as William would say, Leinster inflicting their world of pain on Cardiff Blues, you can tune into that in Irish or Welsh. It's on TG4 and BBC Wales, so it should be interesting indeed. Now, Ulster picked up their first win in the new season, seeing off fellow Irish province Connacht in Galway, 18-7, the final score there. William, last year's runners-up, Ulster, they overcame a bit of a strong Connacht start, in large part thanks to the work of Paddy Jackson, the young fly half. He had a very good game.
Well, he had a very good second half. I wouldn't say he had a good game. I wouldn't say he had a good 80 minutes. He had a good 40 minutes. I think the problem that we have when talking about young Jackson is the fact that he's only 21. You know, the fact that he is a bit inconsistent, you know, shouldn't be world headlines. You know, 21-year-old player is inconsistent. Yeah, we know that. If you look at what, for example, Johnny Sexton or Ian Madigan were doing when they were 21, it wasn't what Jackson's doing. So, I think he needs to be cut a bit of slack by particularly the press, the rugby press around Dublin and guys like George Hook and so on. They just seem to want to crap on him from a great height at every single opportunity and invent slights that don't exist. But he certainly isn't the finished article. His first half display, missing relatively easy kicks, missing kicks to touch. But when he does hit the line at speed, you can see exactly why people get excited about him. I think by the time he's 23, 24, he's going to be quite a good player. It wouldn't be very difficult, I don't think, to fix the problems with his goal kicking. Goal kicking isn't terribly difficult if you've got a bit of talent, and he obviously has. But it wasn't a one-man show, despite the, you know, when you're the out half, you know, when you get a chance to knock over goal kicks, your points tally makes you look sometimes better than you actually are. And that's true of all tens. The players that stood out for me, I'll begin with the Ulster side, I suppose. Obviously, Henderson played very well.
Picked up man of the match as well.
Yeah, and maybe deservedly, because he's just a brute, really. You know, he's a bit like a slightly bigger Stephen Ferris in some ways. Not as quick, obviously, over the ground as Ferris, but imagine the two of those in a back row together. It'd be quite exhilarating to watch, at least if you were an Ulster supporter. So he was good. Luke Marshall had a good game. Again, being used a bit on the short crash ball, but he's 15.5 stone. 6 foot tall, so he's got plenty of grunt about him. But when he does spot a gap, he goes through very quickly, accelerates really, really well. The other player who played well for me on the Ulster side was Darren Cave. A bit sort of understated, but he tackled really well. He shored up in the midfield, and every time he did something, he did it well. He's a cracking player. And you know, I wasn't overly impressed with some of the other guys, but it was okay. You know, there were some good players on the Connacht side. Is it Healy, the winger? He was a very quick looking guy. And Jake Heenan, the young All Black guy, the young guy from New Zealand. I thought he was very, very good. I looked out for Craig Clark, but I didn't really see much of him because they didn't really have much of a look in, you know, in the tight. Ulster just dominated them without being exceptionally efficient, I have to say. But it almost like, you know, when they come out of the second half, it was almost as if they'd thrown a switch and suddenly we were watching the Ulster of last season, as opposed to, well, if you go back to the game against Glasgow, I don't know how they contrived to lose that, because they had Glasgow stuffed and trussed and on the spit for 75 minutes and then shot themselves in the foot yet again. But yeah, it was good. The Connacht discipline was terrible. I mean, they gave away an awful lot of penalties, and I'm sure that's something that Pat Lamb will be concerned with. But the other guys in Connacht that was looking out for didn't really get a chance to shine. So
you mentioned Paddy Jackson for Ulster. I suppose his opposite number, Dan Parks. I think he became the first man to pass the 1,500 points mark in the league's history after his try in the 10th minute.
Yeah. Funny enough, the try was really the first missed tackle. It was actually Paddy Jackson's. He missed it. And then Deggy Fitzpatrick had a go, and can't really blame an 18.5 stone prop who's flat-footed. Dan Parks is a fine player in his own way. the fact he's got, I don't know, maybe 69 caps or something like that, is it, for Scotland?
Yeah, it's some, it's unbelievable.
1,500 points is phenomenal. So, but the, when Ronaldson came on, I don't know an awful lot about Ronaldson. I know I think he played in the AIL. I thought he looked the part when he came on. You know, he just, sometimes when you see a player and you just see their physical demeanour and the way they move, you think, well, that guy, yeah, that guy's got what it takes. And Ronaldson impressed me. He really did. Let's hope for Connacht's sake and for Ireland's sake, because I believe me and Okorah is going to be out for a while.
Yeah.
You know, Connacht, they do need a better 10. For all Parks' great history, he is in the vintage stage. And funny, again, you know, Parks is a great kicker out of hand, but when Connacht had the ball, they didn't really do that. They seemed to want to go through the Ulster team, you know, physically, and they just were never going to do it. Gavin Duffy was guilty half a dozen times of catching the ball and charging straight up the field and then getting battered backwards. The one thing, the Ulster defence is pretty mean, so they'll be ashamed of letting in that try, but they'll be pretty pleased with the rest of their work. So I'm glad to see Ulster back in the winning ways. The thing about it is, having lost two games, I think last season they only lost five. Was it five? Maybe six altogether?
Yeah.
So they can't afford to lose any more than, say, another three games the whole season. So things are pretty tight. One other player, sorry, that I should have mentioned, who often flies under the radar, is Michael Allen. I first saw him playing for Methodist College in the Schools Cup. I think he played in the same team as Jackson, when Jackson was, I think, played in the final as a 15-year-old. Michael Allen is a very, very good rugby player. You know, he always played his trade as a centre, where he had astonishing acceleration and great balance. But he's not going to get a start in the centre for Ulster very often. But on the wing, he certainly seems to have come on. And I was encouraged in the sense that Ulster still have to bring a Foa and Best, and with a bit of luck, Ferris, Pienaar, Paddy Wallace, Trimble, Tommy Bow. You know, they've quite a lot of guys still to come back in, and if they all hit fitness together, then we'll see. We'll hopefully see the role that we had last year picking up a bit of momentum.
Yeah, I think a lot of people will agree with you, and definitely optimism, a little bit of optimism there for Ulster and a bit of momentum. And just to mention Craig Ronaldson, I think he was signed back in April for Connacht on a one-year deal, the Lansdowne out half now. It seems like a good signing, as you said, the way Connacht are going. Just before we leave this game, Ulster, of course, William, taking on Benetton Treviso. I know Treviso, they've only won something like one of their last eight away games. They're not a good away team, even though they did get that win over Munster last week. This has to be a win at Ravenhill on Friday. 7:05, the kick-off there, and it's live on BBC.
Well, my main concern is that the one thing that Treviso do have is a very good front row, and that it looks as if Declan Fitzpatrick, who injured his neck, I think, in a head collision with someone, if he's not available, we're pretty stuck for tight head props. We have Ricky Lutton, who fails to impress me as much as a lot of other guys. They seem to think he's the second coming. Well, I don't think he is as yet. So yeah, outside of him, I don't really have anybody. I hope young Fitz is fit to play, because if we don't have a decent tight head, then we're going to get screwed in the scrums. And we've already seen this particular referee, he's already refereed Ulster this season, and he's not terribly sympathetic. So I would be a little concerned in that regard. But if Ulster can put out a good front row, and with Callum Black having yet another great season, you know, at the loose head side and Tom Court there, we've got two great loose heads. I noticed that Callum Black never gets a look in at any of the Irish camps. I really can't understand why, because he's just a super player, and he's just getting better and better with every game. You can just see how good he is. He's one of those quiet, efficient guys that gets on with the game. Pretty good in the loose, as well as in the scrum. So if we can front up there and we get the line out sorted out, because it was a little bit dodgy again. And this week, I think this week, we might have Best and Bow possibly back, though likely they wouldn't start the game. They'll probably come on from the bench. But we've been doing okay without them. So yeah, I say Ulster, and Ulster win with the caveat that they'll win if they have a good front row available, and if they don't, then it's anybody's guess, to be honest.
Yeah, okay, indeed. And Matt, we see Connacht are at home to the Ospreys. Now, I know the Ospreys are one of two undefeated sides in the Pro 12 after three rounds, and Connacht have won their last two games against Welsh regions. Does that give a little confidence to Connacht, or can you see this Ospreys unbeaten run continuing?
Well, I think if the game was in Wales, there'd be no question in my mind that Ospreys would win. But the fact that the game is at the sports ground in Galway there, I think does give Connacht some chance. And looking here, it seems as if Connacht beat Ospreys at home the last time the two sides met. So although I think if you're betting on this game, you'd favour Ospreys, it's certainly a game that Connacht should feel they should have a chance in. And of course, although Ospreys are undefeated, one of their results was a draw with Leinster. So I'd favour Ospreys, but I think if Connacht can come to the party, they certainly would have a chance.
We'll see if they do come to the party. Unfortunately, that match not on TV, I don't think, or streaming as far as I know, but it is a Saturday game at the sports ground in Connacht. It's a 5 p.m. kickoff there if anybody wants to get down and give it a look. If you'd like to sponsor, advertise, or simply get involved with any of the shows on TalkingSport.org, drop us an email to dave@TalkingSport.org. That's dave@TalkingSport.org. I want to move on to the Rugby Championship now, and we've got South Africa taking on Australia. The Springboks need to win well to keep their hopes of beating New Zealand in to take the Rugby Championship title. I know a lot of people who follow Southern Hemisphere rugby will say that there's no chance New Zealand have this in the bag, but nevertheless, Matt, South Africa will be hoping to prove a point at home to Australia and really, I suppose, push New Zealand right to the end.
Yeah, from a neutral point of view, it would be great for the Rugby Championship to have an upset this weekend, either Argentina beating New Zealand or Australia beating South Africa, because it's been a little bit ho-hum this season that basically New Zealand and South Africa seem clearly better than Argentina and Australia. And saying that, I don't see Australia beating South Africa at home. I mean, it's difficult enough to beat South Africa at home if you're in form when you've been playing like Australia have over the last year or so. I don't see it happening at all. Unfortunately, I mean, I think South Africa will win, and I think they will probably get the four tries as well, and I think that will lead to being a deciding match the following weekend against New Zealand. So from an Australian point of view, obviously they'll want to try and win, but I think their best thing would be to try and start playing with a coherent game plan, show that they have played together as a team, try and minimise the damage, maybe put some good players together and try and get some tries of their own. But I don't see any other result other than a South African victory here, to be honest.
Yeah, Matt, just want to put a point to you about Australia. And I know I was reading this week that hooker Stephen Moore came out and made the point that Australia's players are still learning to adapt to new coach Ewan McKenzie, but they're in a better position than the last time they played South Africa. Would you go along with that in the sense that it's still a learning process? They're trying to find out the new styles that McKenzie wants them to play. How do you think it's going to fare in that regard? Are they just painting over the cracks, as they say?
Well, you might be right. I mean, obviously with a new coach, he brings new methods. And in saying that, McKenzie had previously coached both the Waratahs and the Reds, so you would think that some of the players should have been familiar with his ways. I guess it's unfortunate for Australia that the way to start under the new coach is the Rugby Championship rather than a few sort of warm-up June internationals or whatever, so it makes it difficult for them. I thought they were pretty ordinary against Argentina in their last game out. So to a certain extent, I think it's painting over the cracks. But I guess, as I said, if they can try and look like they're starting to have a coherent game plan, that'll be a step in the right direction. They need to get their show back on the road pretty fast because, as we know, they're heading to Ireland for the Autumn Internationals. At the moment, I give Ireland a great chance of beating Australia. So they've got a lot of work to do, but perhaps he's right. Perhaps they are getting used to Kenzie's ways, and we will see some improvement there.
Okay, but you can still see a South African win there.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. I think Australia have brought back Ben Robinson and James Horwell, and well, they're pretty good players and experienced. I really don't see anything other than a a bonus win for South Africa, I think.
Okay, we'll see what Australia can bring to the table, and if the win they had away over Argentina will boost their confidence a little bit bringing into this match. Now, looking, I suppose, at Argentina and New Zealand, Matt, New Zealand will want to continue the blistering rugby that they have been playing. Although I know we spoke about it in depth last week. The game between South Africa and New Zealand, it wasn't much of a game. It was ruined by a refereeing decision. But New Zealand will be out to win the rugby championship in style, and what a good way to do it by trouncing Argentina in Argentina. Not an easy task, but surely this All Blacks team have what it takes.
Yeah, I think one of New Zealand's problems will be complacency, potentially, mainly because they'll probably have half an eye on the game the week after, which should be the decider for the championship. But New Zealand does have good standards, so I'd still expect them to play well. From an Argentinian point of view, I think their coach has made some good selection decisions there. He's brought back their halfback, Martin Nandajo, who was, to my mind, a little bit inexplicably benched for the last game against Australia. He's clearly their best halfback, and in fact, I think he's a very good player. So from an Argentinian point of view, I think it's great that he's back. They've also brought back their centre, Marcelo Bosch, who's another very impressive player. And then, one of my favourite players, Amorosino, has got a start on the wing for Argentina. The other good thing for them is that their lock, Tricio Albacete, is back from injury. And the last time Argentina played New Zealand, their line-out really struggled. But Albacete's a genuine lock, a very good player. So I think from an Argentinian point of view, that's great. I mean, the crowd tends to lift Argentina, and they do play well at home. So I think the match, initially at least, could be close enough. And certainly last time when those two sides met in Argentina, they made a fantastic start to the game. But I'd expect New Zealand to wear them out as the game goes on and to pull away for a relatively comfortable victory. That'll be my prediction.
William, what do you think?
Yeah, nothing in life is ever a foregone conclusion, but the nearest thing to that is Australia, or the All Blacks playing Argentina. The only sides really that ever trouble them are Australia, but not at the moment, and South Africa, and they're about the only ones here within a sniff of the All Blacks at the moment, as far as I can see. So, no, I think it'll be a comfortable, not exactly a stroll for the All Blacks, but I think they'll manage very comfortably. Dan Carter fit, Matt? Will he be playing or?
No, Carter's out still for the moment, but I guess from a New Zealand point of view, Aaron Cruden's recovered fully, so it looks as if Cruden's going to get the starting 10 position for this game. The other thing that's good for the All Blacks, I guess, looking ahead, is that Richie McCaw is recovering better than expected, so he's not going to be fit for this game, but it looks like he'll be available for the South African game, which is great news from a New Zealand point of view.
Yeah, I was just thinking whenever Dave was mentioning Dan Parks hitting 1,500 points in the Rabo League, Dan Carter has actually hit 1,400 points for the All Blacks, which is quite an astonishing feat when you consider the amount of injuries he's had recently and the fact that it's at international level. It's quite sensational, really.
Yeah, I mean, New Zealand's got ridiculous depth at 10 at the moment. I don't recall us ever having so many options at fly half, but as you say, I mean, Carter just seems to be so injury-prone these days, and I think it's a good thing he's taking a sabbatical after the Autumn Internationals, and from my point of view, it can't come soon enough. I think he's going to take a few months out to try and do some conditioning work and get his body back on top, because the way it's going at the moment, I would think he's in some doubt of making the 2015 World Cup. He just seems to get a lot of injuries, so I think it's good for him to take a sabbatical. But as you say, his record in international rugby is quite outstanding, really.
Yeah, fantastic player. I think, maybe it's off the point a little bit, but, I've been watching rugby since the 1950s, and I think he, of all the players that I've seen, he's the one that, for me, that I think is the greatest player, the greatest back to have played the game. His skill levels are incredible, and I certainly hope he makes the next World Cup, because there's one guy in the world who deserves a World Cup medal, World Cup winner's medal, and I think it's him.
He's been so unfortunate. I mean, obviously, the 2003 World Cup, he was played at 12, which is not really his best position. And then, obviously, both 2007 and 2011, he had an untimely injury. So, as you say, he's sort of one of the greatest players who hasn't really had a chance to shine on the bigger stage. I guess he got the Lions series, where obviously he was a star. But, yeah, it would be nice for him to bow out on a high note, because don't see him lasting too much longer after 2015, that's for sure.
Yeah. I think the thing about him is that he's one of those players that makes it look so easy that people don't really appreciate just how good he actually is, because if you make something look simple, people think it is simple, but it's not. The guy's a genius in the rugby sense, in my opinion.
Yeah, about the only other New Zealand player I can think of who's sort of had the natural ability like that would be Christian Cullen. But Carter's a fantastic fly half, I agree. And New Zealand's had some good ones down the years, but certainly he's been a joy to watch.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll send the L podcast to the New Zealand training camp in our support for Dan Carter, a genius of the game, as William says. If you'd like to sponsor, advertise, or simply get involved with any of the shows on talkingsport.org, drop us an email to dave@talkingsport.org. That's dave@talkingsport.org. Now, lads, just before we rock and roll, we spoke a little bit on last week's programme about the Irish team and Joe Schmidt's selections. Now, there was a couple of questions across boards, Facebook and Twitter and that kind of thing. So I'm going to just put them to you guys. I don't know, you can give me your brief answers or whichever. If you don't know, you don't know. But I'll give you this one, William. It's about regarding the Irish team. And we had Sweewee on boards. He says, could the panel select a bolter from each of the four provinces for Schmidt's first proper squad? Will Connacht still be represented when the numbers are reduced? Now, I know we've heard it across the media circles, Will, that Connacht are going to lose out completely when the squad is reduced. But what do you make? Could you select a bolter from each province for the first proper squad?
Well, I could certainly select a bolter from Connacht, depending on the physical well-being of other players. And that would be Robbie Henshaw. I think that's a possibility. I can't really see anyone else. McSharry might be an outside bet, but Henshaw certainly looks to be the real deal in the making from him. From Ulster, well, we've got plenty of guys who are sort of putting their hands up. But to be honest, I really can't see Joe Schmidt selecting any of the sort of the young on-cap players. I can't see anybody there that's going to, you know, to be a surprise. I really can't. And from the Leinster squad, no, because again, I don't really see anything. There isn't anyone in Munster, Leinster, Ulster, really, who are sticking their hand up and saying, "Yeah, you know, pick me." There are players about who might sneak in, but Joe Schmidt isn't renowned for his romantic idea about rugby. He wants the best players to be on the pitch at all times. And there was a lot of consternation because everybody said, "Oh, look, it's the same squad that Kidney would have picked." Well, of course it is, because they're the players that we've got. You know, just because it's Joe Schmidt doesn't mean to say he can open up a cupboard and trot out another 15 brand new internationals. It doesn't really happen like that. So I don't think Henshaw will be picked. But if there was one bolter out of the four teams, I think it might be him.
Okay, thanks a million for that. William, Matt, just to come to you on a point that was made by AK on boards. He was asking the question, how serious are the rumours of the French plundering our Lions, the likes of Murray Heeslip, Sean O'Brien, etc.? Now, just before I let you answer that, there was a reply by one of our regular panellists who happened to cover a lot of French rugby. He stated that the French clubs don't plunder. They will, however, make offers to any player of that level, international level, who may be available. The decision to leave is down to the player, despite what some recent exiles might suggest. The IRFU cannot compete with the four or five ultra-rich French clubs. However, don't forget the majority of French clubs are under as much threat as the provinces. Now, Union Bordeaux-Bègle, they've already come out publicly annoyed that many of their players have already received offers from the bigger fish. Now, Union Bordeaux-Bègle, they're not an exception. Agents also play their part, but the decision goes down to the players, no one else's. Now, Matt, the point that other panellist was making was the sense that it's not just about the great Irish players perhaps getting poached by the French clubs, but in fact it's turning into a problem in France because teams like UBB are finding it hard to hold on to their players. What do you make about the whole thing?
Yeah, well, coming from New Zealand, where we've had our players plundered, as it were, over the years, it's, I would think that the threat is very genuine. I mean, at the end of the day, to a certain extent, money talks. I'm not being disparaging here to any of the Irish players. They obviously would have prefer and would have loyalty to stay in Ireland. But at the end of the day, if a team's offering you money, that's, you know, €200,000 or €300,000 a year more than what you're getting in Ireland, you know, you're sort of duty bound, I would have thought, given that you only have a relatively short career, to take a hard look at it. So given that the French, some of those French clubs are very rich and have money to throw around all over the place, I would think it's a genuine threat to Irish rugby. And I know that there are the tax breaks here, but some of the people have been pointing out that, you know, perhaps with the difference in the salary, that it still was more than what's worth staying in Ireland for the tax breaks. So I think it's a genuine threat to Irish rugby. And certainly, obviously, we've got, once again, in the background, this Heineken Cup issue that's going on. So I would take it very seriously. And I hope the Irish Rugby Union takes it seriously as well, because one of the things New Zealand's learnt over the years is that it's important for the union to, you know, to take the players seriously and to work in with them. If the players feel that they're playing rugby in an environment where they get to play well and their game's progressing and they have a chance to represent Ireland, etc., often they will stay behind and accept a somewhat reduced salary. But if they felt like they're being taken for granted, or, you know, the union doesn't really have their concerns at heart, then it makes it easier for them to move to other countries. So in answer to AK's question there, I think it is a genuine threat for sure.
William, to come to yourself on this, I mean, we've seen with the soccer, it's gone completely money talks. A player will go to a place they've never been before, never even heard of before, if the price is right. Do you think the rugby has kind of gone down that route? And as AK's question mentions, is there a serious problem here? And how serious do you think it is, the rumours of the French plundering our talented players?
Yes, I think it is a genuine problem. As Matt said, you know, if someone comes along and says, like, you're getting 200,000 playing for Leinster, we'll give you 500,000 or 400,000. How could anyone in their mid-20s turn that down when they know that the next week they could break their leg and never play again?
The injury argument is huge when it comes to this, I think, yeah, particularly with rugby.
I mean, we've seen the young Leinster 10, was it McKinley, was it? Who lost an eye or lost sight in an eye. Is it McKenna? Maybe a mistake. You know, someone like him who looked to have a really good future in professional rugby suddenly, you know, is gone because of a millisecond of an accident. So if you look at someone like Sean O'Brien, people say, okay, yeah, Sean's a, you know, he's a guy who likes his farm and his animals and so on. But rugby's a very, very precarious sport. I think back a lot of years ago to a great guy that played a few times for Ireland called Rodney O'Donnell. He played fullback, and he looked like one of those guys who was just going to be the best fullback we've ever had, but got injured. I think he got a neck injury, I think, playing in South Africa, perhaps. And he was gone. That was it. But he was a fantastic player. Someone came to me in my professional career before I retired and said, we will double your salary. I would just say, well, what's your address? I would,
exactly, you know, yeah.
You know, you're going to go. The difference, you know, someone, you know, going to France, it might mean in a period of 5 years or so that they would earn upwards of €1 million more than they would by staying at home. How many people can afford to turn that down? Some guys might, if they got good off the field promotional activities and a good income stream. But most of the guys, let's be honest, aren't going to be like that. And as for the tax break, remember that the players at Ulster don't have any tax break. They don't get that nice sweetheart deal that our colleagues down south get. I don't know that any of them are being sort of approached, but it wouldn't surprise me if some of them were. And it will go eventually end up the way of the Premiership in soccer. It will be just a lot of guys from the islands in New Zealand and Australia and South Africa who are tempted here by what is relatively good money, even outside the level of guys like O'Driscoll and so on. The guys in the level below that, the really good pros, who are never going to be on the sort of money that Johnny Sexton has offered, but they're going to be offered more than Ulster or Leinster or Munster can afford to pay. Because some of these French oligarchs are sensationally rich and quite happy to throw the money about. I mean, if you look at Toulon's roster of players, it's almost obscene. It really is. And the fact that they're now are trying to have signed Ruan Pienaar from Ulster is a bit of a blow. It's something we can't get rid of. It was always going to happen once the game went professional. I remember saying at the time when it was a done deal, professionalism was coming in, and I remember saying to a guy, we're debating the whole pros and cons, and I said, well, look, I would rather watch an Ireland side that had the likes of Fergus Slattery and Ken Kennedy and Mike Gibson and Tom Kiernan et al. Playing as amateurs than very indifferent players playing as pros. Fortunately, over the last 8 or 10 years, the Irish international side has begun to look like a match for anyone except the All Blacks. This is a serious threat to the well-being of Irish rugby, because if the Heineken Cup money disappears, then the IRFU can't really afford to pay the salaries of the likes of Heaslip and Sean O'Brien, and they will go. And you get a guy like Stuart Olding, who looks to be a sensational prospect, certainly one of the best I've seen for a very, very long time. You know, if he doesn't get regular starts for Ulster because Darren Cave is in the way and an agent comes calling to Stuart and says, how would you like to earn $300,000 a year in the south of France? He's not going to say no. So the IRFU do have, I don't know what they can do about it, because, you know, they have to cut their coat according to their cloth, and they can't afford to pay players €1 million a year, €750,000 a year. It is a big worry. There isn't any way around it unless the French, the FFR, try and do something about it. Perhaps introduce a squad cap. The fact that Toulouse have a budget of, was it €25 million a year? And they get a stadium sort of handed to them by their local municipality and so on. It isn't an even playing field. I don't know how you can make it even, because business is business. But it is a very, very worrying situation.
Yeah, when you were talking about the injuries and that, it was kind of bringing me to Leinster's own O'Malley, of course. I think it was a knee injury that ended his career, I think only at 25, 26, you know, there was years ahead. So you can kind of understand it from a player's point of view. But having said that, maybe we've been enjoying having home success in rugby for so long that this day was bound to come, you know, which is disappointing.
I think it was bound to come as soon as England and the English clubs didn't see themselves as top dog anymore and began to look for scapegoats to blame rather than looking at their own inadequacies. They looked around for people to point the finger at. And that sort of attitude that they have has brought us to the impasse that we have in European rugby. And it's quite shameful. I don't know who's to blame, because none of us are privy to the dealings of the PRL or the ERC. We don't know the inside goings on. But, I mean, some of the guys who are directors of the ERC are also directors of PRL. And I can't understand how PRL were allowed to negotiate with these guys without them going to the ERC and telling them, because they would have had a duty of care as directors of the ERC to let them know that something was going on that was detrimental to their future. I really don't understand how the PRL were able to negotiate in secret behind the backs of the ERC when some of the guys who are directors of ERC were actually involved in those negotiations. The whole thing, to my mind, is quite despicable.
Yeah, I think a lot of rugby fans, not just in Ireland, but also across Wales and Scotland, and probably England as well, you know, they will make the point that, well, we should sort out our own affairs before having to use scapegoats, William, as you say. Just to move things on briefly, Matt, just to come to yourself, there was a question from Adrian Hennessy on Facebook. He asks, are we seeing the honeymoon period with the new scrum laws coming to an end? There seemed to be a ridiculous amount of resets last weekend, both north and south of the equator. Are we seeing this? Maybe it wasn't such a good idea to change the scrum laws.
Yeah, I'm not sure there was a honeymoon period, to be honest. No, I think at the moment it's going through a period where both the referees and also the front rows are trying to work out how the system works. Obviously, the referees are trying to work out how they can referee it in a way that hopefully allows the game to flow without the constant penalties, and obviously the front rows being the slow players that they are, of course, are trying to find ways to get around it and get on top of things. So I wouldn't write it off yet. I mean, I personally think it is an improvement on what we had, but it does need to come right fairly fast. So I hope that the autumn internationals aren't ruined by a succession of penalties. So I'd give it a bit more time yet, but I agree was slightly worrying last weekend. Certainly the Leinster Glasgow game that I watched, the scrums were just penalty after penalty. Sort of the ref kind of went one penalty one way, one penalty the next. So yeah, I'm not sure there was a honeymoon period, but hopefully things will come right. But I'd personally like to give it a bit more time before I say it hasn't worked.
Give it a bit more time, William.
Well, if you look to the game that I spent two very pleasant hours watching on Friday night, the scrums went very well. There were very few collapse scrums. There weren't that many penalties. Lacey had the guys working quite well. He, you could hear on the ref's mic that he was, you know, chatting away to them and kind of keeping going. I don't know whether that's a great thing or not. I've always been a little bit ambivalent about the refs being matey with the players. But Lacey, unlike the Rabo final, actually had a very good game. And he seemed to manage that not quite well. I think also having pretty experienced props helped. But I can understand the frustration that sort of Leinster fans might have felt because, again, Glasgow, in the game against Ulster, the Glasgow front row just threw themselves to the ground at every opportunity because they were being stuffed. And the referee didn't do an awful lot about that. So if the referees are going to be consistent, then it'll be fine. But if each referee is going to have his own interpretation of it, it's just going to become a lottery, just like the other lot. And I'm reminded of a series of old rugby games that were shown on TG4, I think, quite a few years ago, called Rugby Gold, and it just showed old rugby international games, not always featuring Ireland, but quite often it was. And when the referee in 1991 blew for a scrum, the players went over and just formed a scrum. They didn't fall down. They didn't.
There was none of this messing
about, not at all. And a quite simple way to fix a scrum would be the front row engages, and when it's steady, then the other guys engage, and the guy puts the ball in up the middle instead of all this crouch, you know, bind. It's just a complete nonsense. And if they want to really do something about it, why don't the referees enforce the laws as they are? They allow you know, one team to push before the ball's put in, and it's been going on for years. They allow the scrum half to put the ball into the second row. It's been going on for years. Every now and again, the IRB refereeing guru sends out a little edict. You know, if the ball doesn't go in straight, you penalise the player. And it happens once, and then the guys start chucking the ball back to the feet of the number eight. Let's have a contest in the scrum. Let's really have it as a way of restarting the game rather than some willy measuring contest between the front rows to see who's got the most shove on. It's I've always thought it was a bit pathetic. It would be so easy to fix. All it takes is a bit of common sense. I think, you know, rugby players around the world have been saying this for the last 4 or 5 years. If they want to fix it, they really can fix it. But they don't really seem to want to be brave enough to say, if you do that, we'll penalise you. If a player, you know, has a full penalty again him for doing something stupid, how many times are you going to do it before he gets sent off and B, his teammates tell him to cop on?
Yeah, a fair point, I think, William. Thanks a million for that. If we could bring the scrum days back to the way it used to be, we'd be doing well. It'd be very interesting to see how players these days would react to that. Well, I'm afraid we're out of time here on Talking Rugby. My thanks to Kiwi fan Matt and Ulster man William. Remember, if you'd like to advertise on Talking Rugby, sponsor or just get involved with the show, drop us an email to dave@talkingsport.org. That's dave@talkingsport.org. You can follow us on Twitter. It's @talkingsport.org. And on Facebook, just search for talkingsport.org. It's that simple. Well, I'm going to be leaving the show in the capable hands of our Munster man Alan for the next 2 weeks as I take a trip to Turkey for holidays. So I'll come back revitalised, refreshed and ready for more rugby action. Thanks a million for joining us. We'll chat to you soon. Take care.